Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for taking time out from your regular house cleaning to join me in our pre-Pesach weeks to talk about mental house cleaning and to get a little taste of Azrieli Graduate School. I really wish I could give you a full buffet because we are so blessed at Azrieli, not only with a faculty that includes Judaic Studies content area scholars, psychology scholars and educational experts, as well as school leader experts. But we're also blessed with a cadre of students and alumni who, as Rabbi Glasser said, not just during a pandemic, but always are devoting their lives to the education of our children and to spreading the traditions of Jewish education and the knowledge of Jewish thought, not only to children, but to learners worldwide. Our topic for tonight is mental housekeeping, and I'm going to share my screen for part of the time, but feel free to use the chat room to interrupt me, to ask questions, and you'll be able to see me at the same time. So let me just get this up and running. And the reason that I chose this topic now is literally a few hours ago, I was taking a toothpick to one of the shelves in my refrigerator, cleaning in all of the crevices. We become incredibly focused, Erev Pesach, on what, you know, cleaning the couch cushions and vacuuming out the car. And yet I think that there's a really important Pesach preparation that we have to do as well. And that requires thinking not about what's in our sofa cushions or what's on our car mats. It's thinking about what's here, what's in our mind, what's on our mind, and how does our mental activity drive our behavior, drive our emuna, and drive our ability to truly be present, not only Seder night, but in our lives in general. We talk about in our preparation for Pesach, we talk about eliminating chametz. And in there are references in Jewish writing and Jewish thought that chametz is symbolic. It's not just removing those crumbs of Cheerios and bread. The Rambam talks about the fact that chametz should not be found in our mind. It should be like dust in our eyes. It should be so inconsequential. That literally Ramban is saying, you have to clean up your thinking for Pesach. And a lot of the literature, the Jewish moral literature, equates chametz as pride, as the swelling of the ego. In other words, as having the mental habit of thinking too highly of oneself. So both of these paradigms equate chametz, not just with a physical manifestation, but also with our thought process. There's a wonderful discussion of Rabbi Alexandri would end his daily prayers with the following supplication, Ribon Olam, you know full well that it is our desire to act according to your will, but what prevents us from doing so? The yeast in the dough, the chametz. And this is from the Gemara in Brachot. There, the word se'or is one of the ways that we refer to yeast. And this commentators discuss that this is a metaphor for the powerful drives and inflammatory passions that lurk within all of us. Our mind can distort reality of our vision. It can inflate our desires and it can move us in the wrong direction. Directions that we would not take if we could clean up our mental activity, if we could do our mental housekeeping. The notion that thought is powerful is totally consistent. Both, we have these ideas in psychology. I'm a clinical psychologist. But also, it's totally consistent with Jewish philosophy and Jewish thinking. We know as psychologists that thought influences our behavior. Thought even influences our physiology. It will change our blood pressure and our heart rate. And thought influences other thought. So if we think about negative things, then we generate more negative thinking. We know that, again, from the psychology literature, but also if you look at the religious literature, they will agree with this 100%. Thoughts can be positive, they can be negative, or they can be neutral. There is no thought in and of itself that is problematic. The question is, what do we do with this thought? And here is an idea that I never realized how revolutionary Jewish thinking was, how important this was, the notion that we have choice about our thinking. Thoughts can be learned, they can be chosen, and they can also become overlearned, ingrained, and habitual. Once I was working with a young woman who was of Hindu persuasion, and when I shared with her the idea that we could change our thoughts and that we choose what we think, she said that that was totally alien to her understanding of her heritage, that in her mind there was karma, things are predetermined, and that she has no power over what pops into her head. Totally opposite of the Jewish notion of kavana, that we can have intent and that we can focus our thinking in a productive or in a non-productive direction. There are certain common thought pitfalls that I'm going to call them negative thought habits, and we'll unpack them in a moment. But in general, these negative thought habits are self-destructive. They keep us stuck rather than move us forward or allow us to grow. And or they drive anxiety and depression. These are not things that make our life better. These thought habits, they do not make us more productive, happier, more faithful, and thankful individuals. And so obviously there are things we want to do our housekeeping for and eliminate. Let's look at some of the most common. And as I do this, think about which of these patterns, which of these negative thought habits are pitfalls that you fall into. And I've put two on each screen because they often go together. So we have here all or nothing, or sometimes called black-white thinking. That's not being able to see that maybe there's a possibility of something. If I'm not perfect, I failed. Black and white. If I'm not an artist, then I'm nothing. And its cousin, overgeneralizing, using words like everything, always, nothing. Seeing a pattern, generalizing from a single event to a pattern. I didn't draw that picture well, therefore I didn't make a stupendous dinner tonight, therefore I'm a horrible cook. That's overgeneralizing. Then there are the mental filter, paying attention to only certain types of evidence. I made a great dinner on Monday night, a great dinner on Sunday night, but tonight my dinner failed. That's all I am focusing on. I don't notice the successes. And again, a close relative is disqualifying the positive, discounting good things that have happened to me or that I have done. Doesn't matter. Yeah, I made a good dinner today. It was luck. It was luck. And after all, it was just salmon. It makes itself. Another pair of problematic thoughts are jumping to conclusions, of which there are two particular types. One is mind reading, imagining, I know he doesn't like me. I know he's thinking that was, I can't cook. Fortune telling, which is predicting the future. I'm jumping to the conclusion that I just know dinner, my Pesach Seder is going to be a disaster. And again, a relative magnification, also called catastrophizing, sometimes called binocular thinking, because when we look in a binocular, it makes things look bigger. Or if we flip the binoculars and look through the other way, it makes things look smaller. It's either blowing things out of proportion. Oh my gosh, I messed up dinner tonight. It means that Seder is going to be disaster. Everyone in the family is going to disown me. Nobody will ever come visit me again. That's magnifying and catastrophizing. And then there are the thinking habits that have to do with our feelings and making judgments. The feeling is using emotional reasoning, because I feel a certain way, something must be true. I feel embarrassed, so I must have made a fool of myself. I must really be a terrible person. If I feel embarrassed, it must be because I did something terribly wrong. And then the judgment or critical thought pitfall, using words like should or must. I should be able to make a 10-course meal. I must be able to make a 10-course meal. These are things that I have to do or I'm a total failure. And the last two, labeling ourselves or others. I'm a loser, he's lazy, I'm an idiot, etc. And what I call, I don't like the word personalization, I call it the blame game, either blaming myself or blaming others. Blaming myself is, of course there's traffic today, I didn't leave enough time, it's all my fault. The converse is, look at this traffic today, they knew I had an important meeting, that's why they're all on the road today. It's personally to ruin my chances with my boss. All of these people came on the road to clog up the Cross Bronx Expressway. By the way, when I give these examples, they sound totally absurd, but if we're honest, there are times that in our inner dialogue, we are talking this way to ourselves. Now, why do we need to think about this? Because these, as I said earlier, these negative thought patterns will interfere with making good choices, with behaving in the right way, with our physiology, how we feel inside, and with how we act and what we do. So when we're confronted with a negative thought, what I would like to suggest, if you take nothing else away tonight, I want you to remember this. Ask yourself, as you're going through your Pesach preparation, and as you have your moments of intense stress, pressure, yes, it happens to us, and doubt, ask yourself with those thoughts that are running in your head, these two essential questions. Number one, is this thought that is playing over and over and over in my head right now, is it true? Is there a possibility that this thought is true? Well, let's take the example of a very common pre-Pesach thought. I'm not on schedule. I'll never get it done. There's no way. I can't make Pesach. I'm a total loser. I'm totally incompetent. I can't do it. Every woman who's ever made Pesach, every man who's ever made Pesach, you know there's a time in your preparation when it gets worse before it gets better and you think you're just not going to make it to Seder night. If you ask yourself the question, is this thought true? At that moment, it's very hard to say this thought is not true. No, I'm right on schedule. It's fine. No problem. Very often, the reason we have a negative thought is because a hint of that negativity comes from reality. We're blowing it up out of proportion, but it starts with a real valid anxiety or worry. So we have to move. Since I can choose my thinking, is holding on to this thought in my head, reviewing it over and over, allowing it to fill my very precious mental real estate, is it moving me forward or is it keeping me stuck? Is it making me feel better or is it making me feel worse? If you cannot answer in the positive, if you cannot say, you know what, this thought is really, it's motivating me. Now I'm really in high gear for getting my Pesach prep ready, including not only my cleaning, my learning, I'm preparing wonderful activities for the Seder, for the family. Then it's not a negative thought. It's not a problem. But more often than not, even if the answer to the first question, is it true? Maybe yes. The answer to the second question, is it helpful? Will be no. And so then it's time to mentally clean house. Just like we have to get rid of the chametz in our cabinets, we have to get rid of the chametz in our head. And how do we do that? Well, the first step is always self-knowledge. The first step is to know, what are my negative thought habits? Am I a binocular thinker? Am I a personalizer? Am I a catastrophizer? Catch yourself when you're doing it. Sometimes I even say, keep a record of those negative thoughts and see what pattern is most common for you. Once you know what your habits are, catch yourself when you're doing it and ask those two essential questions. And then you can clean house. With one of these options, which we'll look at in a moment, you can refocus and reframe. You may be able to use distraction. You can create a new mantra, but you have to avoid what I call Pollyanna statements. So let's look at what are those options in number four. What do those look like? What do I mean by refocus and reframe? Very often, a negative thought keeps our mind uniquely and narrowly focused on one particular aspect of an issue. Yes, the cabinets aren't clean. Yes, the food didn't come out great tonight. But that's not all of what Pesach is about, is it? So if I refocus and reframe, I say, I'm not going to think about Pesach as a gourmet holiday. I'm going to think about it as time with my family. And I know I can do that well. That's a reframe. When I think about it that way, I take some of the valence, some of the power and the oomph of the negative thinking about, but my cooking won't be perfect, away from everyone. Maybe I refocus and reframe and say, you know what? The days of having to make everything from scratch, there are plenty of caterers that can, I can dial them and have delicious meals, and it will take the stress off my plate. That's refocusing and reframing. Distraction does wonders with anxious thoughts. But here's the trick of distraction. If a thought has grabbed hold of your mind and is powerfully engaging your mental activity, you need a distraction that is more powerful than that. So, you know, grandmotherly advice of just think happy thoughts or don't worry so much about it, very unlikely to work. What you need to do is to say, as intense as that worry is, I need a mental activity that's just as intense. I'm going to think about all of the state capitals of the U.S. in alphabetical order. I don't think I could even do the states in alphabetical order. I'm going to see if I can remember the order of the Parshiot. I'm going to go through the order of the Seder. I am going to rehearse one of the paragraphs of the Seder, and I'm going to memorize it. Something that is mentally engaging is the only way that we can use distraction. For some people, music serves as a wonderful distraction. For other people, and by the way, the research on music as a distraction suggests that when you're doing a task that has a language component, like you're doing something, preparing for your Seder for that requires writing things down, that music with lyrics will interfere with your ability to focus on the task at hand. But non-lyric music, classical music, instrumental music, will actually facilitate you doing your work better. You have to experiment and find what works for you as a distraction. And the last issue here of not making Pollyanna statements, the human mind is quite amazing. When we take a negative thought, I can't cook, I'm a total loser, and we try to replace that with the thought, my new mantra is, I am the next Julia Child. I'm going to be on Top Chef. I am an amazing cook, and I will be an amazing cook by Pesach, which is only 2 weeks away. Our brain automatically, our mind automatically rejects it. It says, oh, come on, no way. And our negative thinking remains predominant. What we need instead is a realistic mantra, something that provides some reassurance, but is also reasonably accurate. Something along the lines of, I may not be the best cook in the world, but I'm not the worst. And you know what? Anybody can roast a chicken or a piece of salmon. Anybody can bake a chicken and make baked salmon. You know what? I may not be the best cook in the world, but I set a beautiful table. Those are examples that are a move away from the negative thought, but not so unrealistic that our mind is going to reject them. And I love the idea of thinking about what your mantra is going to be. A colleague told me recently, who's dealing with a lot of family stress, and is in a healthcare profession where she needs to wash her hands very, very frequently. She says, you know, we're supposed to sing happy birthday or the ABC song. She said, my mantra when I wash my hands is, my family is growing and changing and things will be well. My family is growing and changing. Every day we're getting better and finding the love, and my unconditional love will stay for my family and things are getting better. And that's how she changes her negative thinking to a more positive mantra. In these days when we are so blessed to find some rays of hope in our mental storehouse, thanks to vaccines, there are actually ways that we can think about vaccinating ourselves against negative thought patterns too. And believe it or not, one of the best antidotes to negative thinking, even as a preventative antidote, is gratitude. When we adopt an attitude of gratitude, as corny as it sounds, when we end each day saying, here are the things I'm thankful for. When today in the middle of the day, I'm here in New York where it was 60 unbelievably blessed degrees today. In the middle of the day, I said, I am going outside to just soak up this warmth, appreciate it, and be thankful for it. But gratitude isn't the only thing that insulates us against negative thought patterns. Exercise is the brain's natural negativity buster. Even 15 to 20 minutes of moderate exercise 3 times a week will build your brain's endorphins, the brain's natural stress-busting chemicals. And togetherness, social connection, has two ways that it insulates us against negative thought. One is that friendships and social connection are just in and of themselves curative and positive. But the other is that the people in our lives are our source of reality checks. When our thinking goes awry, when we're saying we're the worst cook in the world, they're saying, no, but don't you remember that lasagna you make that's so delicious? Or you bake the best brownies. They're the ones that correct us when we veer off course with our thinking. And never underestimate the power of our basic biology. Yes, I'm talking about our minds, but our minds live in a biological organism that needs sleep and food. Think about how cranky you get when you're hungry. That's not the time when your positive thinking can take hold. When you're exhausted, your positivity dips. So taking care of things like your sleep and your eating are going to make a big difference. There are so many Jewish perspectives on this, but I just loved this to kind of wrap things up before we have to stop. This is a Breslov perspective based on the Likutei Halachot. The way Rabbi Nachman puts it, we're the rider and our thoughts are the horse. The Rebbe's analogy tells us that not only can we train our thinking and regain control over it when it veers off, but that it's normal for thinking to run astray. So no reason to panic. The fact that I have negative thoughts, that's normal. The challenge is to remember always that we're the rider. We're in control here. You have to dominate the horse and subdue it. You have to rein in those negative thoughts, pun intended. The challenge exists because the horse, the thought, seems to be as independent as we are, but that's not so. Hashem made it to look and seem that way so that we have free will. But in fact, anybody who wants can control and ride the horse. We are entering the wonderful Zman Chirutenu, the time when we shift our mindset into the minds of free people, when we see ourselves at the Seder table as if we ourselves experience the redemption, the Yetziat Mitzrayim. What a wonderful time for us not to just clean our homes. And by the way, to teach our children too, not to just clean their book bags and their knapsacks, but to do the mental housekeeping that will make us all healthier and better people. Wishing you all a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a thoughtful holiday. filled with healthy thinking and lots of good health. And
thank you so much, Dr. Novick. Thank you so much. Dr. Schiffman, are you with us?
I don't know if Dr. Schiffman's here yet. If anyone has any comments or questions, please feel free to share at this point. Beautiful. I don't want to take Dr. Schiffman's time, but we have 2 minutes and he's not here. So anybody, and this is your chance. This is our chance. Anyone who wants to ask a question about a negative thought you're having, by the way, I didn't talk about it, but one of the negative thoughts that all of us are confronting, one of the negative thought habits that all of us have had to deal with, and personally, it has been the greatest challenge for me this year, is the thoughts of loss and longing. The Seder table will not have everyone around it this year that I had hoped. Thank God we've not experienced loss in my family, but we have had the challenge of not being able to be together. And once again, this year, we are welcoming, this is the second Pesach that we are celebrating, Baruch Hashem, a new member of our family that we cannot physically go and see. And it is very easy for those thoughts of loss and longing to predominate and to take over your thinking. And instead, my mother always told me that my grandfather, Lev HaShalom, would tell her, the most important thing when you're a parent and when you're a grandparent is that your children should be well and should be happy. If you can see them, that's gravy. But you just need to, if they're well and if they're happy, you have to be happy. And that's a mantra that all of us need now to think about as we go into another year where we're not out of the, the danger zone yet and things are not the way that we would like yet. But we have to focus as much as possible on the brachot that we have in our lives and go forward. And I see my wonderful colleague, Dr. Schiffman's joined us. So I am going to turn the floor over. And I apologize, but I'm teaching now. I have to go teach another class. So I'm glad this is recording so I can have the benefit of learning from my colleague yet again.